Final case of the day is Estrada Ramos against Holder. Mr. Khalil.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Khalil J. Khalil, and I represent the petitioner, Manuel Estrada Ramos. This agency review case boils down to two main issues. Number one, whether the determination that petitioner never obtained lawful permanent resident status conformed with BIA precedents. Number two, whether the petitioner was adequately afforded the statutory right to present evidence, particularly that the dismissed simple possession case did not remain a conviction for immigration purposes. First of all, issue number one. The board's opinion below was based heavily upon its holding, its previous holding in Colomatangi.
The holding you describe it as a simple possession conviction, but he got a year in prison for it, which seems to be pretty high for just a simple possession case.
I think, Your Honor, it was a felony conviction where the term of imprisonment was 1 year, but I don't think he served 1 year. The record isn't clear on that. So the holding of Colomatangi is basically what controls this case, at least issue number one. The holding of that case was an alien is deemed ab initio never to have obtained lawful permanent resident status once his original ineligibility is determined in proceedings. In our case, the board interpreted Colomatangi's holding to mean that not only aliens who committed some sort of fraud or misrepresentation were excluded from those who were lawfully admitted for permanent residence, but also those aliens who had not otherwise been entitled to it. Although Colomatangi agreed with the reasoning of two circuit court cases, the Fifth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit Court, that did hold the expansive view, the catch-all phrase of had not otherwise been entitled to it, nowhere in the decision of Colomatangi does the board hold that the term lawfully admitted for permanent residence excludes those aliens who had not otherwise been entitled to it. The board merely concluded that the IJ is required to review the original ineligibility of the alien to determine whether or not.
I'm not sure what parsing that particular opinion will get you when trying to distinguish its holding from its dicta and so on. Let's just deal with the statutory language. Statutory language is lawfully admitted for permanent residence. And the board, in both its opinion and its brief here, says that the word lawfully has a substantive as well as a procedural component. That is, it doesn't just mean that the process leading to it was correct. It means that the admission for permanent residence was substantively correct. My question for you is, why is that an unreasonable interpretation of that statute? We're within the domain of Chevron here, accepting the board's reasonable understanding of its own organic statute. So why is using the word lawfully to denote substantive lawfulness an unreasonable interpretation of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, I think clearly the board is given deference to interpret Colomatangi, even assuming that...
It's not interpreting Colomatangi. It's interpreting the statute. And the question I'm asking, in order for you to win, you have to show that the board's understanding of the statute is not reasonable. That's what I'm asking you to address.
Well, I think the statute would be reasonable. But even putting that aside...
I don't want you to put my question aside. I wish you would address my question.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know if I can answer that question then. But the second portion of this interpretation of Colomatangi, even if...
To repeat, the question here is not the interpretation of Colomatangi. It's the interpretation of the statute. That's what you've got to deal with. You can't win this case without dealing with that question.
Yes, Your Honor. However, when they issued their opinion in this case, the board, they were referencing to Kolomatangi and not to any statute. So my appeal is within the confines of Kolomatangi. And whether or not the alien was afforded that in the underlying proceedings, whether or not he was allowed to, the judge reviewed his original eligibility. I think it didn't happen here. So even if it is a reasonable interpretation of the statute, I think the rule is that the alien is entitled to have his original ineligibility reviewed in the lower, in the IJ level, at the IJ level. I don't think it happened here. I think the closest attempt in which at least the IJ said that the alien was inadmissible or he was not lawfully admitted for permanent residence is when he states in the record on page 74 that the regulations along with the act, which is the INA, allow for a waiver, but cocaine is not a waiverable offense for permanent residence. But this is not an evaluation. That's just the statement. The immigration judge didn't review the admissibility regulations in 96, 97. He did not review the...
What is your argument? Is it your argument that the conviction was irrelevant or that its expungement removed it from the category of convictions that would render someone inadmissible?
First of all, Your Honor, I think that it wasn't an expungement. I think it was a dismissal. I don't think it was an expungement. I think it was an outright dismissal. According to the California Penal Code, in which this alien moved to have that dismissed.
So that's your critical argument, that it was dismissed?
Well, that's a minor argument in this. I think that's a minor argument in my appeal.
What's your major argument?
The major argument is he did not have his right to have his original ineligibility reviewed at the IJ level. The IJ didn't do that at all. The IJ was focusing the entire time on whether or not that conviction...
Review his conviction? What does that mean? Suppose the conviction hadn't been expunged, then what would you want the immigration judge to do?
Find that... Well, at that point, you'd go to the issue of relief, which, in this case, there wasn't any relief available. I'm just saying that the IJ didn't look at his original admissibility or ineligibility to be admissible in 1997 when the INS granted him his lawful permanent resident card. That's all I'm saying. And second of all, when he tried to elaborate, the judge had focused mainly on whether or not that conviction remained under matter of Pickering and this court's decision in Ali versus Ashcroft, which upheld matter of Pickering. The board attempts to...
So you view the conviction as irrelevant? I'm just trying to understand your argument.
Well, the original conviction stands, Your Honor, and it's relevant. It's just that the 1997 dismissal basically...
Well, I thought you said that was a minor consideration, the dismissal. Now I don't understand what you're arguing.
What I'm arguing is, Your Honor, the original eligibility to be admitted...
What is the significance of the conviction? Suppose it had never been expunged. Dismissed or whatever happened to him.
We wouldn't be here today.
So why do you call it a minor argument, this reference to dismissal?
Well, in reference to my appellate brief and what I thought was the best points to attack in this decision by the BIA and the IJ.
All right. Let me ask you a related question because your time is running out. You have not reserved any time for rebuttal, so you will never see a white light. You say that the immigration judge committed an error by not taking more evidence, but you don't say what evidence that was. What evidence did you want to present to the immigration judge that the judge refused to receive?
Well, if I were the attorney at the IJ level and I
was... I'm not asking you anything about who was the attorney. What evidence did you try to present that the immigration judge refused to receive?
The certified court order, which is normally required in these types of cases, to see whether...
Why is that relevant?
That's relevant because all the petitioner did was move to terminate, and he had submitted a case report, which he thought, erroneously, would be enough to show that the case was... the conviction was dismissed. But it wasn't enough when he found out that he was going to lose his legal, lawful permanent resident status.
Look. If you could tell me why it was relevant, that would help. That is, are you denying that the document that the agency submitted was authentic? You think the certified document would be authentic, so you're challenging the authenticity?
No, I'm not challenging the authenticity, Your Honor. I'm just challenging...
I'm lost why you think a certified copy is any more helpful.
Because one is, Your Honor, one is a case report from the clerk's office versus a judge's order, which may be more indicative and detailed.
It may be more. Well, presumably you've seen it. Is it more indicative and detailed?
I have not seen it.
But it's a public document.
It's a public document. It's a record pertaining to your client. How can you say the immigration judge wouldn't consider it if you haven't even bothered to get it and tender it?
Well, I know from the case report, Your Honor, that there is some confusion as to whether it was California Penal Code.
So you go and get it. You figure out whether it's any different from the record that was before the immigration judge. And if so, you say, dear immigration judge, there's a problem here.
Well, Your Honor, and that...
You tell me you'd never seen it yourself.
Your Honor, that would have gotten me way out of the 180 days for a motion to reopen to show new evidence. That was over 2 years ago.
I don't see how you think you can win in the U.S. Court of Appeals without showing that there's a material dispute. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Khalil.
Mr. Hives.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Michael Hives on behalf of the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. Petitioner's conviction remains valid for immigration purposes, and as such, he was not entitled to adjust his status at the time he did so. And as the Court has suggested, the matter of Kolo Amatangi is entitled to substantial deference. Two statutory definitions under the INA are at issue here. INA 101A48A, defining what a conviction is, and INA 101A20, which defines what it means to be a lawful permanent resident. With respect to the dismissal, expungement, whatever it was, under California Penal Code 1203.4, the Ninth Circuit has stated that that still has effect for immigration purposes, as has California State Courts.
Do you think that helps you?
I would hope so, because given how the Ninth Circuit tends to treat criminal aliens a bit more favorably than some other circuits. Nonetheless, the state court in California said the same thing. It still has effects for immigration purposes, so the conviction remains. That being in effect, and also with respect to what more evidence there might have been as to that conviction, the record still plainly shows that the record that was submitted says motion pursuant to California Penal Code 1203.4. Thus, we look to that motion itself, or look to the statute, excuse me, and what it says. And it says that upon completion of probation, the court can, in the interest of justice, discretionarily allow the plaintiff to withdraw his plea and things like that. But effects still remain. That conviction is still there. There are other ways for a criminal conduct to get a conviction to go away under California law, and this is not one of them.
What kind of expungement? Would it have to be like a habeas corpus proceeding in which it was determined that the person had not committed the crime or conviction was unconstitutional, something like that?
This court recognized in Ali v. Ashcroft that it requires a procedural or substantive defect in the underlying proceeding for it to no longer have immigration consequences. Your Honor, Judge Easterbrook was on that panel.
It just doesn't matter who's on the panel or who writes for the court. These are opinions of the court.
I understand.
Would it matter whether the procedural defect was related to guilt or was just some technicality, maybe statute of limitations had run or something of that sort?
Well, that would be something for, the state court would have to consider and put forth some kind of other decision. And as Your Honor suggested, it could be habeas or...
The Immigration Service presumably decides what kind of expungement is relevant to a determination of whether, he was lawfully admitted in the first place.
Yes. And that's why we look to the proceeding that took place here. It was a motion under...
The immigration agency's position was that if a judgment is set aside as invalid, no matter why it was invalid, statute of limitations, failure to serve process, if it's set aside as invalid, then it doesn't count. But if it's set aside for humanitarian or rehabilitative reasons, then it does count. Am I correctly understanding the position?
Not precisely, Your Honor. It still must require some kind of procedural substantive defect. I believe what you're saying is 95% correct. There's a little bit more to it. And that's precisely what matters here, is that this is rehabilitative.
What's the extra 5%?
What's the 5%? You must be too
sophisticated. It's a question of what type of procedure, what type of substance was at issue as to the underlying conviction, and the process that's gone through in state court.
Has the board ruled on this? So that its case, whatever it's called, beginning with K, that was a fraud case, wasn't it?
Are we talking about Koloa Matangi?
Yeah.
That case involved fraud.
So has the board taken a position on what type of invalidity lets the person off the hook? Or is that the courts have been saying these things?
Both. As respects this specific...
So are there other board decisions dealing with this?
Yes, there actually are two Chevron-worthy board decisions that implicated here.
Which we considered, it wasn't a judicial decision. We held that the board was entitled to give the construction to the act that it had given to the act.
Correct. Yeah, that was giving deference to a matter of Pickering. And there's actually a subsequent decision discussing this very California Penal Code section, matter of Mariquin Garcia.
Is that the same thing in Gill, for what that's worth?
Yes, Gill involved an issue that hasn't been discussed much here, involving the Federal First Offender Act and Lujan Armendariz. And actually, that brings me to another point I'd like to clarify earlier that Judge Evans raised regarding the nature of his underlying conviction. It actually was for possession with intent to sell cocaine. So it's not simple possession. That's actually a mischaracterization. Focusing back to Koloa Matangi, however, assuming the conviction remains for immigration purposes, as Koloa Matangi explicitly states, aliens otherwise not entitled to adjust their status were never adjusted ab initio. It was simply void. And in reaching that conclusion, the court cites both a case involving fraud out of the Ninth Circuit, Monet, but also a matter of Longstaff out of the Fifth Circuit, which involved no fraud whatsoever. That in that situation, there was no suggestion that the alien had withheld anything. It simply just couldn't happen. The adjustment was improper at the time it occurred. It wasn't lawful. It simply did not fit under the definition as stated in the INA, INA 101A20. Requires, as the court has recognized, other courts have recognized, this court hasn't specifically spoken to that issue. But the Second, Eighth, and Eleventh Circuits have all agreed that lawful requires more than mere procedural regularity. It requires substantive compliance with the law. And aliens that are convicted of controlled substance violations, in this case it might actually be an aggravated felony, are not admissible. They're simply inadmissible and thus cannot adjust their status.
I'm still puzzled by you. In your brief, I thought you were that so far, you know, the nature of the dismissal and or expungement or whatever, I thought you were relying on court cases rather than on board cases. Am I missing something?
I absolutely cite Mariquin Garcia several times throughout the brief. I believe the first 12 or so pages of my brief discuss the validity of his conviction, which I believe this is where this case could theoretically begin and end. He would not be removable but for the conviction, presumably. I'm not sure if there's any subsequent events that have happened. But assuming this conviction remains, that's a kind of the beginning and the end here. The court has no further questions. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.